Rat Pack, where you at?
Yo, what's up? It's Tuesday, August 6th. This is The Rant, and I'm Jeff.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We're today on the show, almost done these team previews. We got to talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tennessee Titans. I also want to lead with some stuff on Brandon Ayuk here briefly as well. Just a quick reminder, FJFantasy.com, promo code RATCLIFF will get you 10% off if you need a draft board. You've heard me talk about it on the podcast already, but awesome product. And a couple of people have said, well, hey, my draft's really soon. Yeah, they ship quickly. You know, I think I got mine in like 3 days. So if you need a draft board, go check that out. FJFantasy.com, promo code RATCLIFF. Also, just a quick announcement for my website where you can get all my content at. It's not just mine, but where you can get my content at, FTNFantasy.com. We have a little sale going on until August 15th. You get 15% off any subscription, Fantasy Plus or higher. So you don't get the core subscription with this, but 15% off with FTN15. If you've been waiting, now's the time to buy, because I've been told it's never going higher than 15%, and it only lasts until midnight on August 15th, so get in now. All right, let's talk about Brandon Ayuk quickly. Also, later in the show, I do have some emails and voicemails. But anyway, Ayuk. Okay, so we all woke up to the news, unless you were on the West Coast and you saw it late last night. Apparently, there are two interested parties here that can potentially get a deal done with the 49ers. Those teams are the Patriots and the Browns. There is a significant hurdle for both of those teams. You know, first and foremost, they have to meet the requirements for the trade with the 49ers. Okay. Well, that ruled out, apparently, the Steelers and Commanders. So they're already gone. I guess these teams can meet it. And my assumption, and I think this is a reasonable one, is it has to include a wide receiver. Now, that could be Amari Cooper. It could be, I don't know, Elijah Moore and change. I have no idea from the Browns. What do the Patriots even send? I've heard Kendrick Bourne, but man, that's a major down. And I like Kendrick Bourne, don't get me wrong. I actually got to interview that dude at the Super Bowl. Nice guy, but major downgrade on Brandon Ayuk. At least Amari Cooper would make sense from that vantage point. But I looked at the salary cap and the cap hit. Believe it or not, even if they traded him now, like the Browns would save money on Amari Cooper now. But then down the line, because of the way they structured his contract with the signing bonus, they would actually get a cap hit starting in 2026. It would be 7.5. It's not terrible, but it's still 7.5 extra they don't get to spend. And then 3.7 the following 2 years. So they have a cap hit down the line. That doesn't make much sense. It doesn't make much sense for the 49ers to trade this dude away in general, but let me get to why I think that is in a moment. I mentioned two major hurdles, though. One major hurdle is meeting the 49ers' requirements. The other is you have to sign Brandon Ayuk to a long-term deal because he's in the final year of his rookie deal. There's no reason to trade for a receiver like him right now if you're only going to have him for 1 year, especially at his age. It just doesn't make sense. Like, trade for an older receiver or close to the trade deadline if you only have him for 1 year, fine, whatever. Move on from him. He goes into free agency, whatever. That's not what's happening here. Now, Brandon Ayuk is not asking for $15 million a year. You know, I'm sure it's 30 plus. I'm sure he's probably trying to get as close to that Justin Jefferson contract as possible, which is going to be very hard for teams to do. Technically speaking, the Patriots have the money to do it, like going forward, but I don't know how that makes sense for Brandon Ayuk as well. Honestly, I'll tell you what I think this is. I think this is just still another negotiation tactic on the part of the 49ers. Now, I'm not going to say definitively he's not going to be traded. I'm not dumb enough to do that. I'm dumb, believe me. I asked my wife, but I'm not dumb enough to do that. I would say, though, it's a very slim chance still. It could happen, but I don't think it will. So the other response here, and it's a question I got immediately. I woke up to questions on Twitter about just how would you adjust Ricky Pearsall? Well, I'm not willing to do that yet. I can't tell you, because if it's just Ayuk going and for some reason they get picks back, which that makes no sense. And I've already talked about this a bunch on the podcast, including yesterday. Doesn't make any sense. Well, yeah, Pearsall would move up. But guess what? If Amari Cooper went there, Pearsall's not moving up. You know, if anything, he stays the same or whatever. Like, he's not moving up. So, I don't know. The point I'm trying to get at, and I see this all the time in fantasy, people just love to overreact to everything. Nothing has happened yet. You know, news has come out, and we can react to the news, but overreacting to the news just feels a bit foolish. So, anyway, my two cents on that front. Let's get into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hey, Baker Mayfield's not bad. I was actually happy to see that. Now, the question is, how much of that was Dave Canales? It's a fair argument to be made. We covered Geno Smith yesterday, that maybe some of that Geno Smith breakout 2 years ago, or revitalization, let's call it, 2 years ago, was Dave Canales. Well, how much of this was Dave Canales for Baker Mayfield? Of course, they bring in Liam Cohen, who Mayfield did work with briefly in his time with the Rams, but Cohen was in and out quick. You know, he goes back to Kentucky after just one season with the Rams. So I don't know. A lot of uncertainty here. A lot of uncertainty. But if Baker continues to play generally where he was last year, hey, he's a top 24 option at quarterback. Now, I'm not overly bullish on him. I've been taking him a bunch in best ball, but quarterback 22 kind of puts you on the outside of draftability range in one quarterback leagues. And he's a little too late for me in super flex as my, you know, one and two quarterback option. He's a little too early for me as my number three option. But I just hope he plays well enough to sustain good value for Mike Evans, who another 1,000-yard season and another double-digit touchdown season. You know, over the last three seasons, he's tied. I was going to say only Devontae Adams has more. No, they actually have the same amount, 33 touchdowns over the last three seasons. Evans is tremendous. He had 20 end zone targets last year. He caught 10 of them. Like, that's awesome. That is so awesome right there. So in general, really liking Evans a lot. You don't have to go overboard on him because he is one of those players. I don't think he's as much love to hate as he used to be. People used to just hate on Mike Evans in fantasy. I don't think we're there anymore, but I actually moved him up just a tick. I the Ayuk thing, I had to move him down just a little bit. I'm not going to overreact. I moved Ayuk to 13 in my rankings update that I did yesterday at FTNFantasy.com. Mike Evans is at 10. So that's probably a second round pick. He might get to the third in your home leagues. We'd have to see. Chris Godwin obviously offers a little bit better value. And last year, interestingly enough, he actually played most of his time on the perimeter. He was in his slot just 37% of the time. Like, his slot rate in 2022 was 73%. So we're actually hearing that he should spend more time in the slot this year. And as of now, Jalen McMillan may be the number three receiver. He was the third of the Washington receivers to come off the board in the draft, that great trio of receivers. Either way, Godwin is obviously very comfortable in the slot. Now, the big knock on Godwin, he doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. You know, he had two last year, three the year before that. He had two, and he did have 10 end zone targets, so it wasn't the lack of end zone usage. So just know, higher floor, lower ceiling. Like, people always ask me, like, give me an example of that. Here's an example. High floor, yeah, he should be reasonably consistent. He should produce wide receiver three-ish numbers. But the chances any given week of him producing wide receiver one numbers are relatively low. I'm not going to say never because I'm, again, not that dumb. Am dumb, not that dumb. Your Trey Palmer dynasty shares may not be doing as well after the addition of Jalen McMillan. As for Cade Otton, more of a best ball option. He's outside of the top 20 tight ends, so I'm not really going there. Again, lack of a ceiling. Really, if you want a piece of the passing game, it's Evans for ceiling. It's Godwin for floor. Now, Rashad White is set up for another big workload. And last year, only McCaffrey had more touches. He had 336 touches, three behind Christian McCaffrey. He was one of five backs to catch at least 60 balls. He had 64 catches last year. And there's no competition. Like, yes, they drafted Bucky Irving out of Oregon. Irving really tested poorly. Like, I think he'll actually look better in pads on the field than how he tested in the pre-draft process. But he's light, 5'10", 195. You know, he should be more of a complimentary piece more so than anything. There's no competition for Rashad White. And the cool thing about Rashad White is he is one of my anchor running backs. I have him at RB10. You don't have to draft him at RB10. He's going at RB13. Now, when it's all said and done, that could be the end of the third round. I don't want to trust that an anchor is going to slip to the fourth round this year. Just not going to happen. I really doubt it happens. Like, if it does happen, cool, great. I'll crack a beer to that. But the reality is, it's probably not happening. So you figure third round on him. Hey, if you ended up with Rashad White, if you really wanted to get, you know, the anchor running back approach in place, like the hero RB approach, then you end up with him in the third round. Who are your first two receivers? Like, chances are that's something like Jamar Chase and who's going towards the back end of the second round, like Chris Olave, maybe something like that. Could be Ayuk. Ayuk's falling in the third round in a lot of drafts right now. Could be Davante Adams. I mean, there's a variety of approaches, and I don't know where you are on those guys. You know, I'm just looking at my ordering right now. But, you know, you could have two top 12 guys and an anchor, potentially. Now, I'm not saying go that route. Everything depends on what happens in the draft, really. But it is very viable this year. All right, let me move over to Tennessee, a team in transition. Callahan is in. My suspicion is this was largely to help polish up Will Levis, because Will Levis flashed for sure, but he also had some major deficiencies. And he did that one thing last year that rookie quarterbacks tend to do that the fantasy masses, the football masses, don't realize they do. And in fact, they think they do the opposite, right? We hear this all the time. Rookie quarterbacks check down. They throw to their tight end. Usually that's not the case. Rookie quarterbacks push vertically. And Levis was holy crap vertical last year. 11.1 air yards per throw. That is insanity. Like over 9 and you're really pushing vertically. Levis was 2 yards over that. So what's going on here? Like in today's NFL, especially when you look at coverage shells, et cetera, you're throwing deep. There's going to be a safety there. Like there's a reason why Patrick Mahomes doesn't throw deep very often right now. That's the way coverage has drifted. And so if you're throwing deep as a rookie, you're probably not seeing those safeties and you're probably throwing into trouble more often than not. Now he did have that. Yeah. He had that big blow up game. Of course, we know what his ceiling can look like. And they do have receivers in play here who can help him downfield, but hopefully they wrangle that a little bit. Like, hey, if vertical elements are a part of his game, then keep him a part of his game, but just make sure he's doing so in a smart way. So is Levis viable in one quarterback leagues? I think he's more of a watch list guy. I have him one spot behind Baker. Maybe he gets there as an option in Superflex. But I doubt he's there after 24 off the board. I think he goes right where I have him at quarterback 23. But the good news is in one quarterback leagues, that means he isn't drafted in a lot of instances. So keep an eye on him. Like he has the ability to potentially be fantasy viable. We just need more consistency out of him. And I'd love to see them work him a little bit more on the ground, let him run a little bit more because he's a big dude. So he's a watchlist guy, but as I mentioned, they brought in Calvin Ridley. That should help. They brought in Tyler Boyd because he knows the offense. Boyd's not going to be fantasy viable or be really surprising if he was, but he does know the offense. He can help out the team in that regard and, you know, no issues on that front. So you have Ridley, you have DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins is currently injured. I'm glad that I got to the podcast when I did, like this one, instead of doing it a couple weeks ago. He is currently injured. He has a knee issue, does not require surgery. Initial timetable as of last week, 4 to 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks puts him right up against the front of the season, like the week one. He may not be ready for week one or week two. Oh, well. You know what's going to happen? You're going to get him for free in drafts. His ADP has plummeted. He was going inside the top 40. This morning, I saw him at like 46, 47 on Underdog. And that's going to trickle down for sure this month into redraft leagues. So if you can handle not having this dude for a couple weeks and he's like your sixth or seventh wide receiver, okay. Or maybe fifth, depending on how running back centric you go early. Nothing wrong with that. But Ridley's the more appealing guy. And this is funny for me because we're the complete opposite of where I was last year on Ridley. And it's the same player. And my evaluation on him hasn't changed. It's just his ADP that has really significantly moved. Last year, fantasy drafters launched him into the stratosphere. He was going as a top 15 fantasy wide receiver in the third round. He is going outside of the top 35 now. He'll be a seventh or eighth round selection this year. And that makes a lot more sense than the craziness of last year. He was such a roller coaster ride last year, boomer bust guy. He was more like, probably should have been drafted like wide receiver 24, 25, 26. So everybody was way ahead of him. And when you draft a guy basically at their ceiling, the only outcome usually is disappointment. And that's what happened for a lot of people last year. And I brought this up. And of course, in week one, he blows up. So I had all these trolls attacking me on social media. One dude said I ruined his fantasy in week one. In week one, I ruined this dude's fantasy season. I never heard back from him after that. They all disappeared after Calvin Ridley stopped producing. And he produced down the stretch. But I mean, that's just what we have to expect. You sign up for Calvin Ridley, he's going to be boom or bust this year. And that's okay. That's totally okay. I actually really like him in best ball at the price point because then I don't have to worry about which weeks to start him. But either way, not bad value. Now, the tight end spot, they have Chigakonkwo. He's going a little bit outside of, you know, draftable territory, but a watch list guy. Running back is going to be the frustration this year because they brought in Tony Pollard, who, man, from a volume standpoint, he was really good last year. It's just the efficiency in the goal line area. He was not good. He had 17 goal line carries, finishes the season with just 6 total touchdowns. He converted 3 of his goal line carries for touchdowns. It's really bad efficiency down there. So the opportunities were there, but he didn't convert. I mean, he had 55 catches. He had over 300 touches last year. So that at least bodes well. But here's the problem. They also have Tajay Spears, who is very similar to Tony Pollard. So who gets the work? And thankfully, the Titans cleared that up by listing them both as first stringers on their initial depth chart. Great. I would give the slightest of edge to Tony Pollard. I don't mind having either one of these guys as a hero / zero RB target. I just don't want both of them. If I'm drafting one, I'm going to place my chips on one of them and hope that I'm right. Do I have a lean? No. Of course, I don't know any more than you do here. You know, no, I don't think anybody outside of that building knows how this is going to go down. And it could be true 50-50, could be true annoying hot hand. So there's appeal to both of them. Tajay Spears offers a lot of juice as a pass catcher. He is slightly smaller than Pollard, so at least, you know, that if that matters. But I mean, honestly, I think you just pick one or you just completely outright avoid it. All right, let's get to some listener emails here. The email address, if you want to email in, is therantpodjr@gmail.com. It's all one word. Let's get to Benjamin here. It looks like he's emailed before. He said, quick question. I've been talking about throws to the end zone a fair amount lately. I've been talking about them for the last 7 years, I think. But he said, just wondering, to use this stat appropriately, do we need to take into account how many times the offense was inside the, and he just mentions yard lines. He said, for example, Daniel Jones is garbage in terms of throws to the end zone. I'm hesitant to say garbage. I'm going to say he doesn't look to the end zone. And I've watched the tape. The dude does not look to the end zone. But anyway, he goes on to say, but how often were the Giants inside X amount of yard lines compared to Aaron Rodgers in 2022-2023? So, yeah, that's part of it. But go and watch those seasons, and you're going to watch when they get down there, especially when they're in the red zone. Like, I hate that red zone stat. It's such a problematic stat. I don't care where the line of scrimmage is. Like, you're telling me if you're targeted when the line of scrimmage is at the 20, that it's more valuable all of a sudden than when it's at the 21? Like, it's a crappy stat. It means something for carries, sure, but for targets, it's about the location of the receiver. And a receiver can be located in the end zone if you're at the 5, at the 10, at the 15, at the 30. Like, regardless, it's about looking there, and it's about taking shots there. And Aaron Rodgers is going to look there and take shots there regardless. So it still is an important stat. And then beyond that, to your point, doesn't it even further the point here? More end zone opportunities by that offense makes the stat that much more valuable. So I like using it a lot. It's a really good one for touchdowns, which are notoriously tricky. Steve checks in. Running back dead zone 10 team leagues. I can already tell. I'm not even going to read the email. All right, ready? The dead zone doesn't change. Let me see if I get it right. He said he's been following since the PFF days, subscribing at FTN since I made the switch. Appreciate you, Steve. So he says, question, is the running back dead zone in the same range in 10 team leagues? See, I knew this question was coming. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change. He's in pick 4. He said, knowing my league, there's a solid chance I may be going zero RB or hero RB. So I need to know where the dead zone ends. The dead zone ends after round 6. And you could, in theory, in a 10-team league, push it to round, you know, after round 7. I don't really see the need, but remember, two fewer teams means more players are going to be on the board. But I'm still, I mean, generally speaking, I'm still building a roster the same way regarding the amount of rounds that you have. I'm guessing it's 16, 18 rounds, something like that. It really doesn't matter. So no, it doesn't change. It does not change. Moving on. Luke, thank you, is the subject. He's also been following since the PFL. You guys have been around, man. I think that's the thing about the rant people is you just kept, fortunately, for some reason, you still subscribe to this thing. And it did launch just like right after PFF. So I think a lot of you guys are like, oh, geez. And it is funny, too. Like, it's like a very different experience on the podcast and the radio show by design. Like, this is kind of like how I normally am. Radio shows like a character, personality. It's different. It's not really how I normally. This is more like this is the real stuff. So you guys are in on the real. But anyway, he said he wants to ask, what do I think about going back to titling episodes like Eagles Steelers preview? You know what? No, I don't want to. I want to title them with fun things that I say. And guess what? Every episode is going to be something that is going to be useful to you, Luke. I get so bored. I think that's what it really is about. I get so bored with these, you know, do the same crap over and over and over. That's why I'm glad I'm not a college professor anymore, because that's all that was. It was the same crap over and over and over. And no, I'm mixing it up a little bit. Like, the episode titles are going to probably reference stuff that I talk about in the episode. So sorry about that, Luke, but yeah, I think you'll still like all the stuff that we talk about here. Brian checking in. Tier-based drafting, subject of the email. Are the tiers listed on my site relative to the position, or is the rating across all positions? I have no idea what you're trying to ask. He said, does the 4B wide receiver, is 4B equal to 4B in running back? No, 4B and 4A are equal. They're just different. 4A, 4B of wide receiver are equal but different. Same thing with running back. No, they're not across positions. And honestly, I really don't recommend tier-based drafting. Like, that's an old school approach, and I think it's limited. I think that people are misled sometimes by tiers. Like, I've even talked about this, that I may have to reshape these tiers because I've noticed, like, people think 4A is better than 4B. It's not. It's just different. Tier 4 is tier 4. And maybe I'll just get rid of A and B or something. I don't know yet. But I actually had to redo the draft board 2.0, because too many people were getting confused by it. And so I redid that. Like, it's slightly different now over at ftnfantasy.com. We actually just redid the cheat sheets yesterday. Every Monday, oh, that took me forever yesterday. It was like five and a half hours to get all those cheat sheets updated. But you guys are worth it if you're subscribers there. Let's move on. I got two more here. Superflex auction keeper. Actually, I got three more, it looks like, because one just came in. So this is from Jeff. He says, in a Superflex auction, we can keep up to three players. If my top three values are to keep quarterback, would I keep those three or consider keeping two quarterbacks? I don't know what you mean by top values. So in an auction, I'm establishing keeper based on my market value and then comparing that to the player. Are you saying that you spend like a dollar each on these guys? Because if that's the case, I guess so. Then just knock it out. Would I keep a third quarterback if ever? I'd really be hard pressed to do so, because that I'd probably be on value with the third quarterback, I'm guessing. You know, I don't know. I can't answer questions without specifics here, so it's really difficult. But I can tell you, at least I'm going to take my market value, I'm going to take my keeper value, I'm going to subtract the keeper value from the market value. If that number is negative, then obviously I don't want to keep that guy. And then I'm going to look to the highest values there. And then if there are some that are close, then I'm going to keep the guys who are ranked highest. So I really don't spend a lot of quarterback in auction, regardless of the format. So usually that's not something that I would face. But, you know, I want to keep the highest value guys. So hopefully that helps you. Let's see. John asking about cheat sheets. He said in running backs, he said Samaje Perine and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are missing on draft board 2.0. They're not missing, man. They are not missing. They are not included. Samaje Perine may not make the Broncos. Clyde Edwards-Helaire may not be the backup in Kansas City. So you have that. They're not missing. That's it. And it looks like he's like comparing sheets. Usually like these sheets are meant to be used by themselves. So I really would like, you're going to really confuse yourself if you're going to look at one sheet and be like, well, it's different here. And like, they're kind of self-contained. Like I recommend if you want to use a positional sheet, just use the positional sheet. If you want to use overall rankings, just use overall rankings. If you want to use draft board 1.0, I talked about yesterday, I really don't like that format, but use it. If it's you, you do what you like, but I don't recommend using multiple. You're just going to, there's no reason to create confusion on draft day. On draft day, just keep it as simple and straightforward as you possibly can. All right, last one, Jason. Title is converting a keeper to a dynasty. I can tell you already my answer, don't do it. Don't convert, just do a dynasty startup. But anyway, he said, He goes, you usually do a great job of explaining your strategy. Usually. All right, that's what I strive for. He says he has something that he doesn't think I've ever covered. He's been running two primary leagues, 20 years each. One is a two keeper with a draft pick penalty. The other is a 13 keeper. Oof. Without a penalty that we call a dynasty league. Well, if it's a keeper, then it's not a dynasty league. He said after listening for over a year, he knows the difference between a keeper and a dynasty league. The question is, how would you logistically convert a 13 keeper league into a dynasty league? He said, I imagine we'd have to have a rookie draft after the NFL draft, but how does one make room on rosters? If we were dropping three players before a three-round draft in April, it would be in May. Isn't that the same thing as 13 keeper league with a draft much earlier than usual? Well, no. Like, so, all right. If you're trying to make this a dynasty league, first and foremost, 13 players, 13 roster spots is not enough. If it's 16, it is not enough. Like a true dynasty league is going to have a much deeper roster. Typically, you have about 1.5 to 2 bench spots for every starting spot. So let's say you have, you know, I'll toss out a low number. So let's say you have 8 starting spots. That means at a bare minimum, you need 20 roster spots. And even that feels thin. It would be more like 24 roster spots. And then every year, the minimum usually I see is 5 rounds in a rookie draft, but a lot of times it's 6. So that means before the rookie draft, you have to cut 6 players from that roster. You're not keeping players from last year's roster. It's your roster. And you're cutting players. You're actively managing the roster in the offseason. You could potentially trade players. You could potentially trade picks in the offseason. It's not keeping players from last year. So if you're doing that, I don't recommend it. I'd rather just do a startup and just go full-blown into a dynasty league. But if you really insist on doing it, you got to add roster spots, I think. You're not telling me how many roster spots you have. And then it's a continuity thing. So the entire roster continues. And then, you know, I like to have that draft in May, the rookie draft. So at some point you have to have a roster cutdown date, usually, and you could make it like the day before or whatever, the draft. And then you cut down the roster and then you have your draft and then those guys come on board. You'd also want to consider maybe adding taxi squad spots. Not every commissioner site can allow you to do it, but I don't know. I'd be hesitant to convert. I'd rather just do a startup. But 13 keepers is really weird. So maybe I guess it is the way. And I don't mean weird in a bad way. Don't take offense, Jason. Maybe the best way is to do that. But if you only have like 16 roster spots, you do not have enough for a dynasty league. Your waiver wire is going to have a lot of players on it. That's really not the way dynasty is meant to be played. So a lot of considerations to be made. Okay, as I mentioned, I do have one voicemail. If you want to email in, by the way, therantpodjr@gmail.com. The voicemail line is 215-720-1708. Let's do the voicemail.
Hey, Jeff. This is Chris in Davenport, Iowa. I just had a question in a Keeper League scenario strategy question. So I understand the idea of going through and not really having a strategy until you make that first pick and make that second pick, and then you're off to the races. My question is, if I am going zero RB in this league, I have DK Metcalf as a 6th-round pick already. I'm keeping Trey McBride as a 17th-round pick. I'm wondering, the strategy at that point is obviously trying to get 5 receivers in the first 6 rounds and, you know, wheelhouse tight end. The fact that I have the wheelhouse tight end already, you know, at the end of the draft, I'm wondering if you think that there's enough value in maybe taking that slot, whatever round you try to take that wheelhouse tight end in. If one of those top four quarterbacks are there to snag them in the fourth or fifth round, because he's gone, I just don't know if there's enough of an advantage that's created by grabbing one of those top quarterbacks, all those receivers up front, kind of punting the running backs down the board, and then already having that wheelhouse tight end. Or would you think that the best advantage would be just straight up receivers all the way through round six, and then start hitting the running backs hard in seven and eight and nine, and you know, waiting for the quarterback? It is a one quarterback league. I know that's going to make a difference, but just looking at any advantage I can get. So appreciate the help, Jeff. Thank you.
Well, the advantage, and you're welcome there, Chris, in Davenport, Iowa. The advantage is going to be a wide receiver here. You're setting yourself up to be ridiculous at wide receiver. You know, yeah, because you mentioned you already have McBride. That's great keeper value. So cool. You have Metcalf in the sixth round. You could, by the time you hit running back up in round seven, I mean, I don't know who's going to be kept, but you could be absolutely stacked at wide receiver. And I know that some people, like, they really have a hard time wrapping their head around the idea of building a roster, not starters and bench. But remember, like, if you're drafting a bench player, he's a bench player. He's a player who belongs to be on your bench. Here, you're going to be drafting top wide receivers to give yourself plenty of depth at the position, plenty of firepower, plenty of ammunition. You're going to have six wide receivers at that point. Then you start hitting up running back. There will still be plenty of those dudes left. And guess what? In this league, a one quarterback league, you're still going to have plenty of opportunity to attack quarterback in the late rounds. To those who want to push back on that, like, I don't want to miss at a onesie position in round four or round three. Onesie position is a position you only start one of. I don't want to miss there. Now, chances are you don't miss as a result of play, although you could this year. There's some volatility up at the top. Like, if you drafted Anthony Richardson, who knows? I mean, I love the ceiling, but who knows? But you also could miss because of injury. You know, that happens a lot too, and I'm just not willing to do that at a position that I only start one of, because I'm only going to roster one of those guys then. You know, I'd rather see if I can get a value quarterback in the 10th round. And if not, then just go safe and upside. I'm going to build a much better roster that way. Ultimately, it's your draft, so you have to figure out your approach. But I'm never going to talk myself into drafting a quarterback in the early rounds, regardless of the scenario in a one quarterback league. It's just way too volatile approach for me. All right, there you go. 215-720-1708. FTN 15 gets you 15% off over at FTNFantasy.com until August 15th. Ratcliffe gets you 10% off at FJFantasy.com. If you need a draft board still, go get one. If you need it, now's the time, man. Follow along with me on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe, on Instagram, at Jeff Ratcliffe. Remember, two more pods this week. I'll do one tomorrow, do one on Thursday. I'm off on Friday because I'm heading to the Expo in Canton, Ohio. Hall of Fame, baby. But that means tomorrow, Washington, and we'll actually talk about a few strategy points on the show tomorrow. So we'll hit you up then. Until then, catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.